Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are tuned in to Shock Therapy on Culture Shock Entertainment Radio. You have a special privilege. I'm in the building today. It's the architect. We in the building with my man. I'm just saying, what's going on?
What's happening, man?
Nothing much. We have a special privilege of having one of my favorite artists in the building today. And for an interview, my man, all the way from Columbus, Ohio, Yavez Ellis. What's going on, man?
What's going on, G? How you doing?
Nothing much, man. How's everything going with you?
Everything is good, man. Definitely a privilege to be on with you all, man. I appreciate the opportunity. Excited about today's dialogue, for real.
That's good. Thank
you, man, for stopping by.
So let's get right into things, because I got a lot of questions I want to ask you about the whole music career and everything that you're doing, man. What's going on with the new Slingshot movement, man? I see we back up, man, and running.
Yeah. What the thing is, I wouldn't say like that, like dormant for a little while, just kind of, you know, figuring out what we wanted to be position-wise, and not just in music, man, but just in life, like. Thing about Slingshot, the way we started, it was a group of brothers who came together and said, listen, we got this common denominator, which is music, which is the art, and which is faith, most of all. And when it came to Columbus, we were all kind of doing our own things and separate ends. And, you know, I began to pray about it because I have been doing music for years. I mean, I've been in it since I was maybe 9 years old. So I'm almost 18, 17 years in it, heavy. And, I decided I wanted to start my own label and not run it like a regular record label, because I've had record deals with different labels and sub-labels, and I realized that they try to constrain the artists, or it becomes so much about business that the art form is lost. So long story short, we started Slingshot Movement to kind of be just that, a movement where even if you didn't do music, even if you didn't rap or you didn't sing, if you were an artist and you painted well, or if you were somebody who was just in your name, roots activist, like, you can be a part of this movement, because the whole goal is for us to actually be moving forward with the agenda of the kingdom, but also to affect social change. And I think that's what makes us different than other labels out there, because we focus also on social issues that are going on throughout the community that affect, you know, people who are oppressed, people who are, you know, downtrodden, and that kind of stuff as well. So okay, question. But the plan is, in terms of the reach, we have some new artists who have been around the movement for a while. They may have been serving in the production end, whether it be coming to shows and setting up tables, whether it be being out with us when we go pass out food to the homeless. And these guys have been sharpening their skills for a while, and now it's time for them to come to the forefront. So everybody who was ever involved with the Slingshot Movement is still a family member, because it's one of those things where even if you got signed to a record deal, you're still actively involved. We still kick and still hang out. And just now, I'm bringing some of the new guys to the forefront to kind of, you know, spearhead the movement.
All right, that's what's up. That's deep. It actually sounds a lot like what we do up here at Culture Shock Entertainment and Culture Shock Entertainment Radio, where that's actually the premise of what we do here, is where we want to, you know, encompass the whole body, every gift that's in the body, to utilize it to the full advantage and glory of God. So I appreciate that.
No doubt.
That's probably why we're
no
such
doubt.
Fans of
no
what
doubt.
You do. But let's go ahead.
No,
let's go ahead and take it back to the beginning and then bring it full circle. I want to know what actually got you started into music, and particularly faith-based Christian music, or whatever you want to call it. Matter of fact, let's start off there. What do you consider yourself as far as an artist?
I mean, it's been a crazy debate about, you know, don't call me a Christian rapper, don't do this, don't do that. At the end of the day, I'm a believer first before anything. And so I don't mind being called a Christian or a Christian rapper. I mean, people are going to call it what they want. If you rap about Christ, you rap about the gospel, people are always going to tag you, so to speak. But I feel like a lot of these labels kind of dictate the places we go and the people that we interact with. And so for me personally, I've always seen myself just as an artist who has a Christian worldview, who puts Christ first in his music, who talks about what he lives out. And what I'm living out is, who's in a world where it's hard to live right. So I speak about that. And so what kind of got me started to music in the first place was, my mother was she had an addiction to crack cocaine growing up. And so I kind of had to find ways to kind of vent. You know, I was always rapping, always freestyling in my neighborhood. All the dope boys who I hung around with always wanted me to, hey, man, that's a little kid that raps. So I was always rapping in the neighborhood. Eventually, my stepdad, who was actively involved in the music business, he ended up managing a group called Roar, which consisted of three older guys. They were all like 21, 22, 23, and me, I was 9 years. And they allowed me to open up for them while they toured. First deal with Rescue Records, which was a big gospel label, you know, years ago. I mean, E-Rock was on the label. You had Mark J, you had Tunnel Rats, you had P.O.D. Like, these are people that really, like, really spearheaded Christian rap and Christian music when gospel was just getting around. Right. And so I signed with them, did an album with them as well, and really got to see the world. Be traveling, you know. I know for a fact in Columbus, Ohio, and really in the Midwest, we were one of the first, you know, Christian rap groups to ever, you know, put out music and kind of to go into clubs and to go into bars and to be in the prisons and stuff. I mean, we had a real message that was super socially conscious. And, I mean, through that, I had a chance to kind of hone my skill. And I made a decision then, like, man, there's no point in me rapping about glorifying drugs, money, and alcohol when those things that would destroy my family. Right. So at the end of the day, I might as well rap about the solution. You know what I mean? That's and cool. That's kind of what I did. I chose that route, and I've always stuck with that route.
That's awesome. It's a good deal.
Hey, Javed, since I'm just saying, I got a question for you. I hear you touched on about your mother, and I was reading an article that they had in the paper about you maybe about 2 or 3 years ago. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago. Can you explain to me what that was like when you were growing up? You know, because I remember they were saying that you didn't know exactly what was wrong, but you know, you were saying that. I remember they saying that once you found out as you were older, you know, that she had got some help. But I guess my question is, did that play a part? Was that a major reason in you rapping about the solution versus rapping about the problem?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, growing up, you don't really know that you know what I'm saying? You just know that everybody in your neighborhood got a mom just like yours who, you know, who's leaving all the time, who you come home and furniture is gone, or, you know what I mean? It's always dope boys in your house that may be cooking up in the kitchen because your mom lets them use your spot as, you know, the cook spot or whatever. So those things become normal to you, in a sense. And then you see somebody who has, you know, a family that's healthy and functioning, and you like, something ain't right. You know what I mean? You look at them differently without realizing that that's how it's supposed to be.
Right.
So I think for me, it's like once I realized that and I understood that there were millions of kids all over the country and all over the world who are dealing with parents who may have, you know, an addiction. It may not be crack. It may be alcohol. It may be porn. It may be broken families. It may be gambling. You know what I mean? Like, thing about it, man, is a lot of us are growing up in situations where, starting off, we're already the underdog. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't have what we're supposed to have. So at the end of the day, like, that's why I refuse to give in to do any other thing than truth. Music. That's just it. It's music that's true. It's true to me. It's who I am.
Right.
Okay. Wow. Well, let me piggyback off that a little bit because I can definitely sympathize with that situation because I went through something very similar. And one of the things that I kind of always look to and kind of ask God is, you know, you see a situation like that, just like you said, and most people don't make it out. So one of my questions was in the beginning was like, you know, God, why did you choose me to make it out and not be another statistic? Tell me how that was for you going through it and dealing with all the issues that came with coming out of that kind of background, because I know there were a lot, and how you perceive your purpose as you grew up and were able to make your own path.
Man, it's crazy that you said that, but one thing I can say is I don't remember ever having a moment where I said to myself, you know, God, why me? I think for me personally,
wow, that's good.
I don't know if it was one of those things where I just was mature at a young age and had to mature fast, you know, because of the people that hung around. One thing that was instilled in me early was that, you know, you take your circumstances, you take the card that you were dealt, and you make something great out of it. And so, for me personally, I knew at a young age that I was dealing with this craziness in my home. But the good and bad thing about it was, when my mom was gone, or when my mom was at rehab where she had to go, I had got around some brothers and rites of passage. And so, growing up, like, I learned. I learned Hebrew Israelite religions, which are really disciplined religions. Like, it's all about discipline, you know what I mean, and being strong. Mm-hmm. And though what they believe is wrong, from the premise of scripture, we know as Christians, right. There are certain things that I took from them in terms of discipline and in terms of taking your circumstance and still being great in it. And I think when I grabbed onto that early, it allowed me never to say, you know what, Lord, you know, why me? But more so like, all right, Lord, you've given me this, but this is what I'm going to do with it for you. You know, that's what I've come to learn.
That's good. Man, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I want to ask you, how's your mom doing now currently?
My mom's amazing, man. She's actually a drug and alcohol counselor and has her own private practice.
Wow.
And so,
it's a blessing.
I just finished up my master's in counseling. I actually graduate in May, and I've been actually helping her with her business. Her and my stepfather together run a counseling company where they work with domestic violence. They work with anger management. They work with drug and alcohol, family services, that kind of stuff. So it's amazing to see what she was going through. Wow. And what God brought her to.
Now,
so she had to go through that.
Is that based in Columbus still? Are they based in Columbus still?
Make sure they hear that again, because I don't think we heard. You said it is based in Columbus?
Yeah, it is based in Columbus, okay. Columbus, Ohio.
What's the name of the outreach that they do?
It's called Business Support Network. That's the name of their counseling service, Business Support Network.
Okay, cool. Wow, that's enjoyable. I'm glad to hear that, man. Also, I guess I wanted to ask you, you're saying, I remember you also talking about, and I've seen it a couple times, that you said your mom was actually still a great mom and that you guys had a really tight bond. Was that something that you kept close to you when you were out doing you rapping and going to, you know, different clubs or whatnot? Did you all keep that to you, knowing that you guys still had a bond, even though she had an issue at the time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my mom was still a great mom. She just had an issue,
right.
You know what I'm saying, that really was overpowering her. So at the end of the day, it was still things that she instilled in me about, you know, how I respect myself and true to myself, you know, even at that young of an age. So even to this day, you know, certain things that I remember her telling me when I was 10, 11 years old,
wow,
that I take with me everywhere I go. So our relationship is very close, really close, because she's a strong woman. You know, you got to respect somebody who came through that. You got to respect somebody who triumphed over that
and
really has defeated, you know, that demon that was over them.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. That's awesome.
That's a good deal. Now, I want to swing it over to the ministry side, if you will, and excuse us to the audience that's listening. I know it's a little bit of signal issues kind of breaking in and out, so just bear with us as, you know, things clear up. But I noticed as we were looking at some of your information, I saw a couple of clips of you preaching. And we know previously you went by the street pastor.
What's up with
now,
that?
You know, I didn't know whether it's just a nice, cool name, or was that something prophetic, if you will? Like, do you plan on going into ministry, or how does that work?
I mean, I've been preaching since I was about maybe 10, 11 years old. When I came to the faith at a young age, there were people around me who saw something in me, and even though I didn't want to necessarily be that guy, it was one of those things where, you know, when you got a mantle on you, you can't run from it.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works.
yeah. So I've been preaching, I've been teaching since around 10 years old, and I go out and I constantly speak, you know, almost every 2 weeks, almost somewhere. But personally, like, my goal was not to necessarily be a pastor of a congregation unless God is saying that's what He wants me to do. I think I'm more called to go into the world, to go into the prisons, to go into the schools, to go into the places that I've been going and really speak on these platforms to show people that there are believers who care about politics. There are believers who care about social policy.
Right.
I think it's going to take place, you know. So to answer your question, that was the whole reason they gave me the name Street Pastor. Like, I never said, hey, I'm Street Pastor. Like, that was the name they were giving to me because I was always out, whether it be like on the corner somewhere, you know, doing open air preaching, or whether it be at a forum that may be for education, but kind of giving them why we need to, you know, be serious about these policies and stuff. You know, so people kind of gave me that tagline. And, you know, as I grew, I just decided to kind of go with my government name, just based on, I just want to be Yavis, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I want to have a pseudo name to go by, in a sense.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Because people still call me shit-tired.
Oh, yeah, that's not going anywhere. It took me all the way up to now to really get to a point where it's not street pass. I mean, Yavis is just,
right.
Yeah.
So right.
That's a good deal. That just means you're doing a good job even back then, way back that earlier.
Right.
And speaking of, nice segue, let's talk a little bit about the music. Because you first hit my radar. Like, I knew a little bit about you, but you really hit my radar right around Prince Among Thieves. That's when I was like, okay. I'm feeling this guy right here. And then Prince Among Thieves Session 2 came out. And that's when all the information was coming out about, you know, what Slingshot was doing. You were down in Columbus doing it big. You had your distribution deal or whatnot. But along the way, we come to find out things didn't go quite the way they seem. So what I want to find out thoroughly and fully, because you hear a lot of different information, I want to find out exactly what happened with the Universal deal and how did that pan out for you?
Well, you know, one thing I always tell people is those kind of situations, like, they always pan out for a reason. And when you take a big hit like that, because for us, it was a crushing blow.
I can imagine.
So, to actually, you know, work this hard, eat to a major distribution company, and then have everything fall out of place. So what took place in a nutshell was that there was a middleman, so to speak, who was brokering that deal.
Uh-huh.
And so everything was good on our end. You know, between Slingshot and Universal, everything was great. But between the middleman and Universal, there was some issues to the point where he wasn't divulging the right information, so to speak. In other words, he was lying about a lot of information, fabricating a lot of information.
Gotcha.
And so he us and tell us that there was certain money and funds needed, which would have certain signatures that would make you think, like, okay, you know, the head over at Universal actually met with this guy. But after I had a conversation with Universal, I discovered that a lot of these documents were fraudulent.
Right.
And so what had happened was he was, you know, pretty much just taking money, accepting money from a lot of different artists and putting it in his pocket as opposed to putting it to where it's supposed to go, supposedly. So if it was money that was retail marketing, it wasn't getting to Universal. It was getting to his pockets and stopping there.
Right.
And so, you know, it was crazy for us because this was somebody who was, you know, came to us as a believer. That was the only reason I actually signed the deal, because I've had other offers from other labels in terms of distribution. But I said, you know what, if I'm going to do business, I want to do something like business with my kingdom that I can trust.
Yeah,
and so it's one of them things where you let your guard down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, long story short, after my conversation, you know, with Universal, we decided that it's kind of best for us to kind of, you know, let the air clear a little bit and maybe come back at a later date to kind of talk about the situation and kind of rebuild it maybe. But I didn't want to go into it the way it was with the middleman in the middle of the situation. And so for us, it took us a long time to rebuild because a lot of money was put into that situation.
House
was put up, you know what I'm saying? So, you know what I mean? It's like, when I say a lot of money, because at the end of the day, for me personally, if I believe in something and I believe that God has given me this ministry, like, I have no problem with putting my all into it.
Right.
And so that's kind of what happened. And so it was just a blessing that, you know, God has given me other opportunities in terms of business that I can, you know, compensate for that, what I lost. But now it's like a matter of moving forward and being more strategic about it. So it's a lesson learned, man. This isn't the first time that we've experienced situations that went bad contractually or that kind of stuff. But the blessing in it was that we were able to get out of that situation, you know, bruised a little bit, but not too bad.
Right, right. Now let me ask you this with that. What was it that raised a red flag with you, like, okay, let me start investigating this for myself. Let me start talking to some higher-ups because something doesn't look
right.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, I began to realize that, honestly, you know, it was one of those things where they were asking for money every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And but the money was, like, little stuff. It was, like, maybe, like, you know, we need $2,500 for this and that. We need $1,700 for this. And I thought to myself, the Universal is a $1 billion company.
Right.
What are they going to do with my $1,700 or my $3,500? What are they going to do with that?
Right.
And so it began to kind of raise some red flags. And then I noticed that, you know, we would get, you know, the albums were done. The Undefeated albums were done. dates kept getting pushed back. People asked for an interview. And so when I went through my documents and the actual contract, I realized that at the end of the day, it was the signatures from, like, people who were actual, like, the presidents of Universal. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, you know, the presidents don't really sign these documents. You know, they have somebody else to sign these documents.
Right.
And that's when I made the phone call, I faxed them over the information, and they said, yeah, this signature is forged.
Wow.
So, from there, you know, it was crazy because, you know, we were headed to a city where this person lived at. So,
still there?
Go find him, go to his house, whatever. It was one of those situations because, again, a lot of emotion and time. And, you know, we had to talking it over and calming down. We had to leave it alone, let the legal situation be handled by attorneys and that kind of stuff. And that's what we did.
Okay, good, good. Now, I just want to recap with that real quick because it's kind of breaking up. I don't know who in it is, but you basically, you talked to the president, you got in touch with him and found out that things were fake, so then you got with a lawyer to kind of clear things up, correct?
Yeah, that's kind of how it happened. We spoke to the Universal, got him over the documents before.
Okay. All right, so we got that portion of everything figured out. So you had the incident with Universal, and then we move on, and you move on to Exist. And you go through the Exist experience. So we're sitting over here as fans, and I'm like, okay, good, he recovered, he went to Exist. And then you do your thing there, and then full circle, you're not with Exist anymore. One album in, and it's like you're gone along with a couple other artists as well. So it made me ask the question, okay, well, what's going on here? So what was that experience like with Exist? Like, why so short of a tenure with them?
I got great